Life can be chaotic. If you're running a retail business, don't let disorganized order fulfillment add to the chaos. Use ShipStation instead. With ShipStation, you never have to worry about shipping and fulfillment again. Whether you're running a business out of your garage or you have multiple warehouses, ShipStation is ideal for every phase of your business's growth. Save time with one login for all your stores and by automating repetitive tasks. Plus, you'll save money with the best shipping rates from global carriers. ShipStation's industry-leading features help you deliver a better customer experience. They'll get accurate and faster shipments, along with automated tracking updates with your branding. And with up to 88% off UPS and USPS rates, and up to 90% off FedEx rates, ShipStation is the fastest and most affordable way to ship. Calm the chaos. Switch to ShipStation today. Start a free trial at ShipStation.com/audio. That's ShipStation.com/audio.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Lumos. Hello, friends. Welcome back to Shell Cottage Radio. I am your host and secret keeper, Ezra, a.k.a. Bill. Also known as Sir Ezra the Watchful, History of Magic Professor, the Flannel Wizard, obviously. Yours truly, me. Please welcome your lovely design witch, the fascination of this year, Triwizard Champion herself, and my wonderful co-host and yours, Lottie, a.k.a. Fleur.
Hello und einen wunderschönen guten Tag. It's so good to have you back for the first time, actually, in our beautiful little big cottage on the outskirts of Tinworth. Kommt rein, macht's euch gemütlich. Welcome to episode 106, in which we discuss Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. This week, we'll talk about chapter 23, The Yule Ball. We'll give you a quick life update with our homemade cottage ketchup, feed our brains with important trivia knowledge, and then dive head on into our chapter summary audio experience.
Let's go. Let's go. Anyone who is watching the YouTube version, if anybody does that, there's like 200 people who do. It's a little bland. It's a little in the works. We're making it happen.
Yeah.
Ordered stuff on Amazon. It's still on the way here. So I just like to, you know, I'm always worried about the quality. I got a full disclosure. We're not recording on an SD card. I'm stressed about it. I don't have my headphones on. Can't check the audio quality. So, hey, give us a little bit of grace. But we're just getting this done.
We're making it work.
We're making it happen, baby.
Yes. And we got the important part of the studio done over there. The Flannel Wizard, what do you call it? Like cockpit.
Cockpit. Like okay. Yep.
Uh-huh. You know, you're ready to.
Yeah, it's my shadow fax. Yeah. Back there. it's where I ride out and I save all the different fandoms, right? It's my job.
Yeah. I love it. And
save the fandoms.
I'm so excited. It looks so, so good.
Thanks.
That part. Yeah, and we're working on this part, but
yeah, working on the part behind Lottie. We're going to work on the part behind me as well. We're also getting higher def webcams. Going to get a new recorder for this. They think this costs money. They cost a lot of money, and so we need to we need to save some money,
right?
Because we just bought a house,
and we're gonna have a child. So
I was gonna do like a baby counter in terms of like how many times do I say the word baby on an episode?
Oh,
I've been doing it a lot. You know what I'm saying, baby? Like I just been I all the time. I don't know. Like it's like the second time, by the way. Third, if you count the word baby. Four, if you count that one right there.
Yeah, just keep going.
Wow. How many times have I said it? Anyway, so we're back. We're getting after it. And what else? I guess cottage ketchup.
How are you feeling? How are you feeling in not just down here, but up there?
Oh my gosh.
We have like a nice two-story. We have a basement and like then the main level basically.
Yeah.
No upstairs, no second level.
If you will. Right.
Yeah.
But we don't know what to do with all the room. So that's kind of cool. And I don't mean that in like a It's actually most people would say this is a small house.
I know, but I feel like there's so much space in here, and it's about to change. I know it's about to change once we have a little one in here, occupying a lot more space. But
by American standards, this is a small house.
Yeah,
very small house. To us, it is huge.
Yes,
because we lived in a one bedroom flat essentially, like it was.
Yeah,
all together. How do I explain it? It was even.
It was all one room. I mean, except for the bedroom that was upstairs, but
it was all one room.
I loved it though. I will always cherish those memories where we lived and we made it work in that small space. And still, you know, we had our office, we had office, living room and kitchen in like one little room.
Right.
And a big part of the room was actually occupied by stairs.
I know. They were great, but
it was cool to walk around them. You had like a little loop going on, but you couldn't put anything where the stairs are.
No, it took up a lot of square footage. Yeah.
Yep. But that's what my favorite part is. Now in our new cottage, we actually sometimes when we need to talk about something, we have to call each other on the phone.
Yeah.
And I can't, it's so far away that I can't even hear you.
I know.
Outside of the phone, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So instead of, you know, I don't know if I'm also very Americanized, but instead of getting up, I'm upstairs doing something
You're
on
pregnant.
My computer. And you know, that's true. That's true. But instead of getting up, coming down here, talking to you, you know, it's just quicker to give you a quick call.
Because
my phone's right there. I know you have your phone.
Well, I'm sitting there. I'm like, who's calling me? What's going on? Everybody, just leave it alone.
It's great. I always think like, wow, I've never lived in a space where I had to do that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's cool. It's been fun. I gotta say, it has been a lot of work, as all of you who own a house know, and even anybody who you know goes into a new apartment, you have to like move your stuff.
Yeah, and that was not the only part, you know, especially when you we purchased a little bit of an older place.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of work to do to flip the house a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean. I'm so happy with how it turned out, but we couldn't have done it with all the help from, you know, family and friends. And
yeah,
that was a lot to pull off in just two months, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the baby on the way, I couldn't help carry any of the heavy items or even like be here for certain procedures like the paint and stuff with all the fumes. And it was just, I mean, I can't thank people enough for helping us out.
Yeah, my dad was clutch and lots of friends and family who helped us out. It was great. It's fantastic. For example, coming down just to set this little recording up.
Yeah.
Lottie couldn't help me bring down any of the stuff that we needed for it, which was totally fine. Big heavy chairs, big tables. Uh-huh. I got that table down here by myself.
I can't. I mean, honestly, I believe you're a wizard.
Thank you.
Because you couldn't have done it without, you know, either Wingardium Leviosa or the Levicorpus.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably more.
Or these massive muscles, baby.
I mean, they're magical. Okay?
That's the fifth time I've said baby. Fifth time.
No, I'm actually so impressed.
Thanks.
I can't believe it.
Yeah. Other things that are going on, by the way. So if you haven't checked out Rosy Little Cheeks, by the way, please go check that out. It's a fun. I loved the most recent video that you just posted. You posted something about actually speaking of moving from the apartment. You did one where you took some footage of when we were moving. You packed up all of your yarn. And I literally looked at it. And I thought, wow, that's a lot of yarn. We have boxes and boxes of yarn. So
yeah,
it was kind of cool. And then you unboxed it all here. Put it up on a new shelf and
to be honest, it's not all on the shelf, so there's still boxes in the garage.
Oh my god, you're right.
Yeah, so it's not all of the yarn, but it's the best of my favorite colors.
Okay,
and all that.
Okay,
but,
we got a yarn problem going on over here.
Yeah,
but no, it's a great thing, and I like your little they're cozy little shorts that you can watch. And you know, what's the next steps for you? Like, are you gonna open up to commissions and stuff? Or
I already have my first commission. Thank you, Angelina, for commissioning me with little Noah the Narwhal.
Noah the Narwhal.
Well, I named him Noah. I you know, Angelina, you can name him anything you want, but she wanted me to make a narwhal. And the reason why, she said, I hope it's okay if I share this, but one of her favorite movies, Christmas movies.
Yeah.
Guess what it is.
No clue. It has a narwhal in it?
It's yes.
Okay.
It's very subtle. It's not the main character or anything. It's Elf. Elf.
Oh,
one that I watched for the first time in Germany with you guys this year. Yeah, I remember that narwhal that I think he rides. He's when he's trying to leave the North Pole.
Okay.
And he gets the water. I think that's why he meets the narwhal that helps him.
I have no memory of that, but it's cool.
I have no memory.
I'll trust you.
But she said that really made her fall in love with narwhals, and I love it. I mean, cool. How cool! I loved how it turned out. It was a great challenge or a great, you know, new thing to make, and it gave me great joy to make it for her and send it to her. And that was a really good experience. And I have a couple of new projects coming up, so I've been testing some patterns for people. Some crochet patterns. Yeah, that's just my new thing. You know, like I just I wanted a creative hobby. I've been wanting to, I don't know, paint, draw, all that stuff, and I love it. But for some reason, and this is, you know, the pun always comes up with crocheting just got me hooked.
Yeah.
Because you're working with a hook.
Oh, I got it.
So yeah, it's true though. It's so fun, and you feel so empowered. All of a sudden, you're like, I can make anything.
Yeah.
And one of my next projects involves a beloved Lord of the Rings character, and then also I'm gonna try and not try, you know,
do or do not. There is no try. Let's go.
I am making some Harry Potter related stuff, and I'm gonna send that off to to some friends.
Yeah,
and, that's all I'm gonna say for now.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, if you guys are interested in any, I make mainly plushies, but I've also made hats so far, and I do want to make more blankets and hats in the future too. So, but I love making little plushies; they're my favorite to make.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so. They're cool. You do a great job.
If you feel like fandom related plushies or even just animals, I also like animals. I've made the perfect pair, which is two pairs. And
oh yeah,
you know, that was one of my pattern tests for Valentine's Day. They were so cute. They were named the perfect pair, and then it's two pairs, and they have a little heart.
Yeah,
holding it up. So those are cool. Cute. Anyway, yeah. So that's been keeping me occupied and obviously prepping for a little wizard to come over hang out with us.
Yeah.
In preparation of that, we are going to change things a little bit, and I'm sure you guys understand. Everyone who has kids or, you know, anyone to take care of in your life does change, and it doesn't mean you can't do the things you enjoy anymore. It's just you have to shift your priorities more and more and work harder on your schedule to make it all work. And for us, it's not very realistic to record every single week anymore, but we have a new model that we're really excited about, and we're going to record once a month, but we're going to record two episodes at a time. That's what we're aiming for, is a once a month recording, you know, especially once we have a better routine down with little baby.
Yeah.
And see how he cooperates with that. But that would be great. Have a long recording session. Maybe you have to take a break in between, feed him real quick, take care of him. Maybe he'll be, I don't know, cooing into the microphone here and there. Maybe you'll hear.
Yeah, maybe you'll hear him on the side. Doing his thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's perfect. These lower chairs are actually perfect to have a little mini bed bassinet right next to us, and
then we can have him on the podcast.
And, so.
when he wakes up in the middle of the podcast, and we come back and we're like, we don't remember what we said.
Oh yeah,
be like, oh, I know why, because they had that little interruption. I think it'll be a really good system. It's just the idea that we're going to record once a month. And then from that, we're going to break it up into
two episodes.
We'll still do two chapters, but we'll do them in one sitting for us. So really the one sitting for us doesn't really matter for you guys. It's really just two episodes a month.
So
that's kind of crazy. We were doing weekly. I mean, I always have to say major credit to anybody who can do something like that. Well, it sounds like I'm giving ourselves major credit, but I kind of am.
Well,
I mean,
it was actually really hard to do. Because it takes a lot of prep work.
Yeah.
Before and after, the editing process is long.
Yeah, it takes a long time. And any of you guys who've known what I've been up to is essentially recording with my good buddy Lane. Before that was recording with Lane and Matt. And before that was recording with Mike, Matt, and Lane.
And somehow Most of them were weekly.
Most of them were weekly.
I can't believe it. I mean, yeah, your life has changed since then. But
yeah, so I've whittled it down to essentially just recording here and there with Up Talking Tolkien for Elaine, for Lord of the Rings stuff, and then keeping Shell Cottage Radio down to two a month.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good. Because I do really want to get through this series. I want to actually have a finished product that is like us going through this whole book series. And I'm really excited to do that because I love this book series. It's fantastic. Yeah. And there is some really cool things coming up in the next year or so.
Oh, yeah.
Year or so, I think. So, you know, we might do it. What? Do you have something you want to say about that?
Yeah, maybe. Because it's related to that. Yes, of course, we have the show coming up. And thank you to Tiffany. We saw a reel on Instagram where she posted some news that there might be, this is not set in stone or anything, it's just a rumor that maybe we have an actor for Albus Dumbledore for the HBO series.
I saw this. I was grinning about this too. Yeah, I saw. Yep.
Okay. I mean, I think they're interested in him. And he's intrigued to do it, but there's no contract yet, no confirmation on this at all. Mm-hmm. It seems like John Lithgow is in the talks. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I think he's really cool. What I wondered was, always felt like they were going to go with purely American or British actors.
Mm-hmm.
And he's American.
He is American. Yeah.
So I'm cool with that. I mean, I think that would be interesting. I think most of them will probably be British. Is he not? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
He was born in New York, went to Harvard, and then to London, though. And he did play, and this makes me think he might be able to pull off a really good British accent, because he played Winston Churchill in the Netflix drama The Crown.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he can pull it off.
Yeah, if he played the great prime minister, then sure, he probably could.
Yeah.
Yeah, which would be really cool. I think he does look excuse me, I'm bumping my that was a mic bop for me there.
Yeah.
But he does look really cool. He looks like he would be a good fit for Dumbledore. Mm-hmm. So I'd be down. I'd be interested. He has that sort of kindly figure, but also he could turn it on.
Yes.
He could turn it on and just, you know, whip out some magic and go crazy, which would be really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a big cast to make. And they were even saying, as I was reading an article about it, like it's a lot of episodes, right? So they're looking at, I think they even asked him. There's somebody who asked him like in an interview here, and it says they're doing 7 episodes for each book. Is that right? So 49 episodes. That's a big series.
Yeah.
He said, or I could just be the fat lady in the portrait. So, I mean.
Okay, that's hilarious.
That is.
That's great. I love it.
I don't know.
Sounds fun. Interesting. I mean, we had great Dumbledores, both the first one. I'm sorry, I forgot his name, but Michael Gambon is the second one.
Yeah.
And they both did a great job, but it would be awesome if we could have one Dumbledore for the whole series, right?
Right, right.
So hopefully he's ready to commit.
Yeah, that would be wild. I would love to see that happen. Another person, and I might have actually just mixed these two guys up that they're talking about. If you want to look him up here, it's Stephen Fry.
Stephen Fry, who read the audiobooks? No.
Because
there is a Stephen Fry who read Harry Potter audiobooks.
Really?
But I do see the news there.
Yeah. So
is that him?
I actually don't know, but people have asked whether or not they're calling for him to
take
a starring role.
I can see that.
Which would be kind of cool. They talked about Professor Binns.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Professor Binns, which he'd pop up and, you know, I think that'd be kind of cool because he'd be a professor. He'd be here and there showing up and kind of boring and droning on or whatever. Or Ludo Bagman. He's kind of got that Ludo Bagman, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of vibe,
that.
Right? So.
Yeah. But I would love for him to be in it. Don't know how, you know, you might not want to take on a major role like Dumbledore's if acting is not your forte, your first passion. And acting is very different from voice acting.
Yeah, but he is.
Is he an actor?
Yeah. So unless I'm wrong about him as He is an English actor, broadcaster, okay. comedian, director, narrator, and writer. So, yeah, I think he's used to doing.
That's awesome, though, then.
Yeah, I've seen him on different things, but.
Okay.
Interesting. I didn't even know he was the person who does the audiobook. Is that true? Because I actually.
I wonder if it's the same guy. I mean, I know it's Stephen Fry who reads it.
Who's the audiobook that I listen to? Like, I listen to somebody different.
There's Stephen Fry, and there is, goodness. Ah, I'm blanking. Stephen Fry and...
Jim Dale and Stephen Fry.
Jim Dale. Yes, thank you. That's the...
So Dale narrates the series in the U.S., while mm-hmm. Fry narrates the British,
yeah.
English-speaking countries.
Yeah. I had listened to both, and I like both, I gotta say.
Interesting. I had no idea. I think I just listened to Jim Dale. That's who I, mm-hmm. I listened to. So
yeah.
I didn't even know Stephen Fry was a narrator for maybe need to switch it up.
Yeah.
I need to switch it up.
I would love to see him in the show for sure. That's cool. Mm.
Interesting. But yeah, as far as Dumbledore casting, I think like I don't really even know. I haven't looked into casting too much as to like who would be cool. I'm sure there's a lot of I like to just respond when they come out and say this is who it could be, because I feel like you could pull out like 15 different people that would be great, and I hope they did have plenty of people turning out. And they're starting filming, I think, in 2025, so this summer they're filming. So that means they already
That's exciting. They should probably know already.
They should already know. I'm pretty sure it's already been. It's just all kept quiet.
Yeah.
We have no idea. This was somebody on Reddit who were speculating about this a little bit. And it turned into a couple of different articles because there's really nothing. And so when there's nothing, we turn to rumor, and you know, people will ask these actors like, "Hey, are you involved?" And they're like, "I'd like to be," or "That'd be cool. I'd consider it." They might already be involved. They'd just not be able to say that they are, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So anyway. Really cool. Exciting that they're going to start filming and they're moving forward with it. They said 2026 would be a potential release date, right?
Yeah, that's that's next year.
Next year. So they got to film it this year.
Yeah.
And
I am so excited for it. And I can't, I mean, it's so cool. I know, you know, our baby's going to be very young and not know anything about it now, but if it's a 10-year project, when he gets into it and they're the last part of the show,
right,
and he's like 10-11 years old,
you can binge
that'd be so cool.
You can binge it, but it's great. So exciting things coming up. They've actually asked other actors too who were in the series before, like for example the guy who played Lucius Malfoy, what's his name, Isaac something, and if whether he would return in a different role.
Yeah,
and for sure he would. The guy who played Sirius, he wants to play Dumbledore.
Oh, that would be cool, too. And right? I mean, obviously, Tom Felton wants to play his dad, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I just think it's who knows what we're going to have. Gary Oldman. Sorry, could not think of his name. Gary Oldman wants to play Dumbledore. Bring him on, so cool. Man. Bring it, because he's much older. He doesn't look anything, you know, that also would add some makeup aesthetics and stuff. So
he would be a really cool Dumbledore.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm also, you know, I'm okay with giving other people a chance. And you know, I'm sure, again, HBO has produced really cool shows. So I'm sure they will pick the best that they, you know, the person that they think is truly the best for the role.
Oh, my God. Did you know that Sirius Black was played by Gary Oldman and also by the dog Barry?
No.
Because he's
his name. That's so
he's a
cute.
Dog. He's just this black dog that they cast.
I love that. Oh, is Barry still alive?
I don't know. That's actually really cool, though.
That's awesome. Sorry. Was it just one dog? Often they have different.
Looks like it was just animals. This one dog. Cool beans. Okie dokie.
All right.
Did you get a trivia question?
I do have one.
Oh, seriously?
I don't think you can answer it.
Oh, okay.
Because cool. I don't this time. I do not have any. Oh goodness, I don't have any choices for you. So there's no ABC.
Okay.
You have to know it.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go.
I'm not looking at it.
What food does Dumbledore order first from his plate at the Yule Ball feast, showing others around him how it works?
Oh dang it!
Because they said that, so that they got rid of all the. The house tables, right? They have smaller dinner tables.
I know it. It's roast chicken. Roast chicken. That's what he said.
No.
Akio roast chicken.
No, it's a type of meat.
I know it is. That's why I said chicken.
But chicken.
Sausages. It was sausages.
No.
Roast beef.
No. Okay. I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, tell me.
Pork chops.
Pork chops?
Yeah.
That was close.
Yeah.
That was close.
The, everyone, you know, they're sitting in front of empty plates and no one knows what to do. And he just says, pork chops. And they appear.
Wow.
And he was like, okay, that's how you do it. But that's kind of crazy, right, for the elves that they have to have. I mean, they have a menu, I think. They can't just order anything like, you know, peach pie.
Right. If it's not made.
It has to, yeah, it has to be down in the kitchen and then they have to make it appear.
Right. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
That's cool. Okay. For me, what was the Christmas? I keep doing that. Sorry, guys. Keep banging the microphone around. I'm not used to these new stands. I have to get used to this. What was the gift given to Harry Potter from Sirius Black this Christmas at the Yule Ball? The day of the Yule Ball, he gives him a Christmas gift. Do you know what it is?
Yes. Was it the mirror already?
Nope.
No?
Uh-uh.
Wait. Huh.
Oh, it's okay. I mean, you got it wrong. So
Dobby shows up and then they open their gifts. What does he get from Sirius?
It's pretty cool, actually.
Nothing with Quidditch. It's something that they... It's not the mirror, the piece of the mirror.
I'm just going to tell you because you're never going to get it.
Okay.
A handy pen knife with attachments to unlock any
yes.
door and yes. undo any knot.
It's actually in my notes, but I haven't looked at it. You know when I wrote the notes?
When?
Before Christmas sometime.
Yeah.
So I haven't fully read my notes in months and weeks. So yeah, I do remember the pen knife. And I think they use it for something later.
Do they? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they even use it. Do they use it? I have it in my notes somewhere.
Well, we'll get to it. Don't stress yourself out trying to remember it right now.
Ah, yeah, the pen knife. It's not, I don't think it is part of the movie.
Right not.
Okay. All right, let's do this trivia. And, yeah.
Purple.
And we're going to just, Who told Voldemort of the prophecy of his downfall?
Severus Snape.
It was the Severus Snape.
Ding, 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 ding.
Good job.
Can we roll for you?
Actually, we got roll it for me. I'm just going...
We have no points from the...
No points from the first one. 1 point for you for this. Boom, boom. Okay. And then, you want to... Here's the cards.
Dun, dun, dun.
What color? Yellow?
Yellow. I like yellow. You ready?
Yes.
Who does Hermione impersonate using Polyjuice Potion when she, Ron, Harry, and Griphook break into Gringotts?
Oh, what's her name? I was ready to say Pansy Parkinson because I thought you were going to ask.
Do you want to read that question again? Because you should know this off the top of your head.
Who does she impersonate when they go to Gringotts?
I should let you get this wrong.
Well, read the question again. I know it's not the Chamber of Secrets. I was going to say, I thought when you first said it, it was going to be the Chamber of Secrets thing. But I know it's the Gringotts thing. And
who does Hermione impersonate using Polyjuice Potion when she, Ron, Harry, and Griphook break into Gringotts?
Oh, into Gringotts. Sorry. Yeah, Bellatrix.
Bellatrix.
I was thinking about the Ministry.
I know.
My thoughts were all over the place. First, I went to Chamber of Secrets. Then I went to the Ministry, and I was like, what is the lady's name? I don't remember.
Pregnancy brain, guys.
And then, let's blame it on that. And, okay, so she's Bellatrix Lestrange. Mm-hmm. Lestrange.
Good job. Point for you.
Yay. That puts us at 26 for Fleur, 24.5 for Bill. And yeah, let's dive into the summary for this chapter.
Chapter 23, The Yule Ball. As Christmas break begins, most students are less focused on their homework and more excited about the upcoming Yule Ball. The Gryffindor Common Room feels more like a party than a study space, thanks to Fred and George's successful and ongoing prank with the Canary Creams. It doesn't take long for the Gryffindors to learn to be cautious about any food they accept from others. Blankets of snow cover the Hogwarts grounds, which gives the Beauxbatons carriage, the Durmstrang ship, Hagrid's hut, and of course Hogwarts Castle, a magical look right out of a fairy tale. The house elves are working hard to prepare one amazing holiday feast after the next. Though Fleur Delacour can still be heard complaining that the food is too heavy. Meanwhile, Ron keeps trying to get Hermione to tell him who she's going to the ball with, but she refuses to say, knowing he would only tease her for it. One evening, Harry, Ron, and Hermione spot Pigwidgeon twittering loudly in the hallway. The tiny owl has a letter from Sirius. In this letter, Sirius congratulates Harry on surviving his encounter with the dragon, but he also warns Harry to stay alert, especially around Karkaroff and the Durmstrangs. This advice sounds a lot like Moody's warning about constant vigilance, which makes Harry chuckle. But even with two more Triwizard tasks to face, the holiday cheer takes priority right now. Early on Christmas morning, Harry is startled awake by Dobby, the house elf, who has come to give him a Christmas gift. It's a pair of mismatched socks he's made himself. In return, Harry quickly grabs an old pair of his own socks to give to Dobby. The elf is absolutely thrilled. The noise has woken up the other boys in Harry's dormitory. They're also super excited about their Christmas gifts, especially Ron, who receives a Chudley Cannon's hat from Harry. He even gives his mom's hand-knitted jumper to Dobby and chimes in some more socks too. Dobby is overwhelmed by this act of generosity, which makes Ron feel happy but also a bit uncomfortable dealing with so much gratitude for something so unspectacular as old socks and an ugly sweater. The kids enjoy some amazing food during their meals and then round up the afternoon with a snowball fight. As the Yule Ball night approaches, Hermione leaves early to get ready, which amazes Ron. He can't believe that she thinks she needs 3 hours to prepare. Much later, the boys head up to Gryffindor Tower as well to get dressed. Harry heads down to the common room wearing his formal robes. There he meets with his date, Parvati Patil, who's dressed in beautiful pink robes. They find Parvati's twin, Padma, who is Ron's reluctant date, in the entrance hall. Ron doesn't pay much attention to her, and instead is focused on hiding behind other people as Fleur Delacour passes with Roger Davies, the Ravenclaw Quidditch captain. He is still too embarrassed to face her after asking her to the dance without much success. When the champions and their dates line up to enter the Great Hall, Harry is shocked to see Hermione looking nothing like her usual self. She's transformed her bushy hair into a sleek, elegant updo and wears beautiful blue dress robes. She is Victor Crumb's date, and while she looks happy, she also seems a bit nervous. Ron doesn't even realize that it's Hermione next to Crumb until much later. Inside the Great Hall, the decorations are dazzling, with frost covering the walls and mistletoe and ivy hanging from the enchanted ceiling. After the champions and their dates make a grand entrance, they all sit down in groups at smaller and fancier dinner tables. The champions and their company get to sit with the judges and officials. After some light small talk during dinner, Harry, Parvati, and the other champions are required to open the first dance. Harry feels awkward, but Parvati helps steer him through the dance, and soon other couples join the dance floor, making it easier for Harry to blend in. When the music changes to a faster song, Harry quickly escapes the floor, and Parvati soon finds a new dance partner from Beauxbatons. Ron, however, stays seated, glaring at Hermione and Crumb, while Padma sits next to him, looking miserable. As the evening goes on, Ron's jealousy becomes clear, and he finally confronts Hermione when she comes to sit with them. He accuses her of fraternizing with the enemy by going with Crumb. Hermione defends herself, reminding him that the tournament is supposed to be about making friends with students from other schools. Hermione is really hurt by Ron's accusations and eventually storms off. Harry and Ron just aren't enjoying the whole dance situation at all, and they slip outside for some fresh air. The luxurious holiday decorations continue outdoors. The Hogwarts staff has conjured up an entire rose garden with winding paths accented by stunning ice sculptures. On one of the paths, they unexpectedly overhear a private conversation between Snape and Karkaroff. Durmstrang's headmaster sounds pretty anxious and is really concerned about something. Snape, however, refuses to offer help and tells Karkaroff to leave Hogwarts if he's so worried. This leaves Harry and Ron confused. What is it that Karkaroff is so scared of and Snape knows of? Why are they on first-name terms anyway? As they keep wandering around the grounds, they spot Hagrid talking with Madame Maxime. Too late to walk away from an awkward moment quietly, the boys are forced to hide behind a fountain. They reluctantly overhear how Hagrid reveals that his mother was a giant, assuming that Maxime too must be sharing a similar heritage. Madame Maxime, however, vehemently denies having any giant blood in her and storms off angrily. Hagrid is left confused and sad, and eventually he starts walking towards his hut alone. The ball ends just before midnight, and everyone starts heading back inside. As they climb the stairs, Harry is stopped by Cedric Diggory, who, to Harry's anger, looks like he was having a great time with Cho. Ron quickly realizes that Cedric wants to speak to Harry in private, and he heads upstairs to the common room alone. And then Cedric offers Harry a strange piece of advice for the second task. He suggests that Harry take a bath with a golden egg to figure out its secret. He even gives him the password to get access to the prefect's bathroom on the fifth floor. Harry doesn't know what to think about this, and he wonders if Cedric is trying to prank him. When Harry finally returns to the Gryffindor common room, he finds Ron and Hermione in the middle of a heated argument again. Hermione is furious and tells Ron that if he didn't like her choice of a date, next time he should ask her before someone else does and not as a last resort. And with that, she rushes off to bed. Ron is stunned and mutters that Hermione completely missed the point. Harry stays quiet, though he has a feeling that Hermione has made her point better than Ron realizes. Isn't that crazy that they have the Yule Ball on Christmas Day?
Yeah. Awesome.
Right?
It's just, you get up. I mean, you're having your Christmas dinner later on. Yeah. You get your presents.
Yeah.
You get your presents. And then, yeah, you just sort of, they went out and had a big snowball fight.
Oh, yeah. Every year they do that, I feel like.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then you roll up and you have a dance and get carried away. You dance the night away. Eat some good food. Get in an argument with your best friend because you really like her and you didn't think that she should be hanging out with the enemy. So there's that.
The enemy.
The daggone enemy.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go to the beginning of this chapter before the Yule Ball even starts. And there is reason to celebrate because the term is over. I think I looked it up. There is in Britain, there's autumn, spring, and summer term. They have three terms.
Oh, cool.
For a school year. Whereas we have four semesters. What do you call them?
Four quarters. Parts.
Quarters, yeah. I mean, makes sense. Four. Four quarters of the year, and they have three terms in Britain. So, yeah, this is first term is over. Kids are on break. Christmas is just 1 week away, and Harry has zero interest in bothering with all the homework for fourth years. Or with the egg, you know, anything that involves a lot of work, he's like, nah.
Nah, he's out. I would be too. I mean, I honestly, he's got other things on his mind, you know? So he's got a big game to prepare for big competition, big whatever. Even just in school, sometimes kids have projects and they're like, okay, I got to work on this project. I'm going to let these other classes sort of drop by the wayside.
Yeah.
Just happens, man. What are you supposed to do?
Right. And the dance itself wears on his mind a little bit because he's one of the champions. He will have to be in front of everybody starting to, you know, the first dance. And
right.
He's not really going with the girl he wanted to.
But as Dean said, like, how did he and Ron pull off two of the prettiest girls in their year?
They didn't appreciate their dates.
No, they did not. And Dean was like, man, what's up? How'd you do it, Harry?
Right. So he was a little jelly there.
He was a little, yeah.
But supposedly the grounds, Hogwarts, everything looks so beautiful. I love reading those descriptions to you. It says snow was falling thickly upon the castle and its grounds now. The pale blue Beauxbatons carriage looked like a large, chilly, frosted pumpkin next to the iced gingerbread house that was Hagrid's cabin. While the Durmstrang ships the ship's portholes were glazed with ice, the rigging white with frost. The house elves down in the kitchen were outdoing themselves with a series of rich, warming stews and savory puddings.
Mm.
Sounds so good.
Sounds so good.
Really? So good. I mean, I love stews and soups during the wintertime. Yeah. It's like my favorite food. However, do you know what savory puddings are supposed to be? Like in Britain, I thought puddings were like dessert.
Yeah.
Savory desserts? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Don't know.
There is savory dishes. Okay. I guess pudding is not just dessert.
There's bread pudding, for example. It's more like a casserole, I think.
Okay.
It's cool. Baked, yeah. Steamed, boiled ingredients to a solid mass. Yeah, it makes sense. It sounds like casserole dishes that are warm. That sounds good too. We actually, that's what we ate this weekend, right? A soup.
Yeah.
Chicken soup and veggie bake casserole, mm-hmm. like a veggie bake and ground beef and all that.
It's great.
It's the best. Because we have a big snowstorm in Ohio right now ourselves. So it really fits.
Yeah. And we have an oven that we can cook in now.
It's yes.
Wild.
Yeah, I'm talking about upgrading. Our small apartment did have a kitchen, did have an oven, but that was, it was just not.
It smoked.
It was terrible. I don't think anyone has cleaned it in 30 years.
Yeah.
So we did not want to start doing that now.
Right, it was really bad. Not gonna lie.
But the house elves are outdoing themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess who complains about the food?
Fleur. Of course she does. It's too heavy.
I'm not going to fit into my dress.
These savory puddings are too much. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know. Like what? I mean, everybody else is good.
Right.
It's just like, I'm not used to this.
Just enjoy it. But
that is something though. When you go from place to place, you mm-hmm. go from like, if you were to go for me somewhere where they had spicier food, mm-hmm. tear me up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Let's try it.
It's like, I mean, you know, you got to get used to it.
Oh, I actually... You know, my German taste buds are not very used to a lot of spicy food.
Yeah.
But when I went to Southeast Asia, like Korea and Vietnam and Thailand, I developed a liking for a little bit spicy food.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was with a Thai family for about 4 weeks staying at their house. And I remember the husband was running... like some Airbnbs or whatever and they had to go to an island. They were kind of separate, so he was barely home. But when he was home one night and he's like, I'm gonna cook dinner for all of you, cool. And I asked him, at the time I was vegetarian, and he asked me, so he made like a special tofu dish for me too. And I asked him, is this real spicy? And he said, no, not at all. I could barely eat it. I couldn't taste any of the other food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're so used to a lot of spice that their taste buds are so different mm-hmm. from mine. And I know he didn't, I mean, he really meant well, and he really thought this was not spicy at all.
Yeah.
And I was sweating.
Yeah.
At the table trying to not, you know, trying to be polite and eat all the food that he made extra for me because I didn't want to eat the meat. Oh, that was awful.
Yeah.
But I do like a little zing now.
Yeah, a little bit. Food. Well, I remember the other day got some Buffalo Wild Wings. And
oh, yeah.
You wanted to try a bite of them. And I was like, you know, go for it. You're like, wow, that's really kind of, I mean, the back of my mouth is already watering. Yeah. Just saying it.
Yeah.
Thinking about it, right?
No, I remember.
And you're like, wow, it's super hot. And like, what's the temperature on this? Like, what's it called? And I was like, it's mild.
It was, yeah, the mild wings.
It's the mild ones.
And I know some people really enjoy getting, you know, to that level of spice where they get into competitions and stuff. And
yeah,
I know you did that once with your friends.
Yeah, I was about to say, Lane and I and Cameron filmed it. He was also the host of something called like Hot Ones that we did. It hasn't come out yet. Cameron's going to edit it and have to get it all pieced together, but we basically tried different hot wings and it was terrible. I mean, it was really bad. But the problem is I then at the end of that, I wanted to eat a bunch of just regular wings with ranch just to like, yep. I don't know, kind of
taste something and make up for that. Yeah.
And I did kind of cheat my way through it because I was like, I'm not going to like,
yeah,
I don't know.
No. Yeah. Don't. I mean, it can get really sick over hurt this. Yourself. Yeah. It's funny, we're talking about food, and the little one has the hiccups right now.
Oh,
it's so funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you feel that, it's just a rhythmic little.
Mm-hmm. Like, what's up?
I love how Hermione reacts to Fleur's complaints, though. She's like, oh, there's a tragedy. And I think I would have reacted the same, even though, you know, we call ourselves Fleur and Bill, but. There is some things that are difficult to understand about Fleur at first when you first meet her. So I'm not gonna deny that.
Yeah, it's all right. She's dramatic.
Yeah.
You know. You get used to it after a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah, she has her heart
in
the
right place. I get used to it. I've gotten used to it.
Because I'm so dramatic. So. She's got her heart in the right place, though, as we will see later on in the last book, where you know, hosts all these people at her house in her beautiful little cottage on the outskirts of Tinworth. All right. Ron is so interested to find out who Hermione is going with. Mm-hmm. But she just won't tell him.
Well, this reminded me of my sister, because anytime that I have a secret that I want to keep and she knows I have a secret, like she would just sort of randomly pop up out of nowhere, like around the corner, and she just ask you a question to catch you off guard.
Oh, yeah. That's what he's trying to do.
Exactly. And it's just like he's just out of nowhere. So who are you going with again for the date? Mm-hmm. And just like he'll let time go by and then keep asking. And she's like, no, can't tell you.
Yeah.
Can't tell you. You'll make fun of me.
Yep.
Right, you guys will make fun of me, and he's like, "No, we won't." What?
Yeah, but he would have if he found out beforehand, and she knows it. But I think she's also a little bit flattered.
Can
we
just
say, keeps asking?
I think though that Ron would have and was going to ask her.
Yeah,
but I think he really wanted to seem like he didn't want her to know that he was interested in her.
Obviously, that's how it is when you're that age,
right? Yeah. So
disinterest is like showing your interest.
Yeah, he doesn't want to. She doesn't want her to know that, so he seems disinterested, right? Yeah. That's why he asks other people or he starts inquiring. But really, that goes on. He's like, okay, if I do this enough, then I'll make it seem like when I ask Hermione, it's just as a last resort, and then she's
and
like, "That's not what I want."
Right?
Like,
she wanted to be the first choice, but he didn't want to.
He doesn't know she wants that.
Yeah,
and he doesn't want it to seem awkward.
Weird that we do that. All of us have done that before, probably.
You
feel like I can't let them know how I feel, but then they will never know because you're not gonna say it.
Crazy.
So it has to be
poor guy.
But I think Ron's just not very very good at that kind of stuff.
No. He's lacking in the whole. I mean, that's their whole relationship starts off that way too, being friends and stuff, and just all of it. So. I don't know. He'll figure it out here eventually, but he's about to get real ticked once he figures out like who she's here with.
You can tell that he really pays attention to her because he even notices that her teeth are different. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's the first one to spot it.
Right. Harry didn't notice, but until Ron says something and then Hermione's like, kind of told Madame Pomfrey to keep going in the hospital when Malfoy, attacked me and everything. And they were really long and Madame Pomfrey didn't care. She says, say stop when to stop.
Right.
But it's cool. Harry notices that her smile is now very different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they say in art, human faces are the most difficult to draw or sculpt because we're so good at recognizing and remembering tons of details, tiny details in the human face, especially your friends and family, that if it's just a tiny bit off, like, in, you know, when you draw a face, we'll notice it right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's the same. Like, if something changes in the face, it's so noticeable, like, right away. Like, we're just so good at recognizing faces. It's pretty cool. Because that's where all the action, the emotions and feelings and
They're conveyed. You have a note in here that Malfoy is trying to make fun of Hermione and her teeth again.
Yeah.
But she's quick and she pretends she spotted Professor Moody and waved to him, which... It's kind of cool. Like, they get Malfoy right, but I gotta say, what Malfoy, and I know I sound terrible when I say these things, but just being older and not taking it as serious and being the kids who are like, well, I think, okay, full disclosure, we just got done watching a show called Cobra Kai, greatest freaking show of all time, by the way.
Yeah,
go watch it if you haven't. It's freaking amazing. But in that show, you get a lot of this. I don't know. They're real about like what kids really would say to each other.
Yeah.
The language is really like, this is actually how kids talk in school. Swear to you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Guys, I see it every freaking day. Yep. It just is what they do. And so it sounds so authentic to me when Malfoy is talking about Hermione. Mm-hmm. Like, Ron's asking about the date and wondering, you know, who she's going with, right? And Hermione says, quote, "I'm not telling you, you'll just make fun of me." Out of nowhere, Malfoy says, "You're joking, Weasley. You're joking. You're not telling me that someone's asked that to the ball. Not the long, what does he call her? Mullard? Mudblood?
But anyways, Mullard. Yeah, molars are the teeth.
Oh, long yeah. Mullard. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's how you then kind of, okay. Didn't catch that. I was like, what's he talking about?
Yeah.
But the best line is when he's like, you're not telling me that someone's asked that.
No.
It's terrible. People are like, terrible. As you should not be laughing at this. But I'm just like, I think because in my mind, I'm like, Malfoy likes her. I know he does. Maybe he thinks he's obsessed with her.
We learned that, you know, in the Chamber of Secrets, we learned that his dad knows all about Hermione because he just keeps talking about her.
Hermione this, Hermione that. Blah, right? blah, blah.
You know? What's going on there? And I know a lot of people love that.
Oh, Hermione, I know, totally.
Draco scenario.
Yeah, he's totally projecting a lot of like his own family's beliefs about blood, you know, blood supremacy and all that kind of stuff. But he thinks she's cute. She's smart. He wants to be. He wants a friend like that. And you're just like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a little bit like, you know, like you said in Cobra Kai, one of the main characters, Johnny Lawrence, who is very blunt, very tells everybody what's up and, you know, like things that are not, they probably know is not great. I don't know. Or not the greatest traits or I don't know, looks about them. And it seems very mean, very much like, no, you can't say that to anybody. But he just straight up, he's from the 80s. He kind of was stuck in the 80s.
Yeah.
Didn't really notice all the changes in society that you can't talk like that anymore. But that made the kids tougher.
Yeah.
It seems like
it's more authentic.
Hard to hear.
Yeah. He just.
But also that helps me get over my, you know, issues and or be proud of things or focus on other things that are better about me.
The kids were really almost like, I thought it was like there was a kind of a little bit of a message in terms of they know he's stuck in the 80s. They know that he's things he would say. They're like, you know, Sensei, you can't say that anymore.
Right.
You can't say that. Right. And he's like, he's like, and then he'd be like, quiet. You know, and they would just jump back into it because they do. All of us, I think, have elderly people in our lives who we love and we know. And we're like, oh, my God, that's just how it was when they grew up. And it is what it is. At the end of that, not no spoilers, but at the very end of the series, he says something that is so ridiculous.
Yes. last 10 minutes or so.
It is. I don't want to even say what it is, but if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. It's literally in the last 10 minutes. And it is when I saw who he was talking to, I was like laughing before he even said it. I was like, please tell me he's going to say something. And he does.
And honestly, terrible. Ron does it too. It's not just Malfoy. Ron, full of last time, and Hermione was so mad about this, right? Yeah. Last chapter, when he made fun of that girl who's had probably more pimples than other girls at her age. And it's terrible. It's not cool, but also.
It's not cool at all. And it's, but I think like Ron's meant to be humorous, right? Yeah. Johnny Lawrence is meant to be like the humor in that. And and when you take things from, I think a lot of people, I had to learn to laugh at myself.
Yeah.
You just have to learn to laugh
and
look
hard
at things. It is hard because there's things that are embarrassing that sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, I don't really want, you know, to whatever. But and it all comes down to intent too, in terms of like who's laughing with you and are they laughing at you and the differences and stuff. And they are. Really important. But I guess when you're reading something and consuming something and you see those characters, they just crack me up. I mean, and they're meant to crack you up because they do the thing you shouldn't do. And you're like, well, everyone's thinking it. And that person goes and says it. So just crazy. Mm-hmm. But anyway, don't take me. I'm still Hufflepuff, guys. Still a good
100%
good wizard. But I do think things are funny.
Yeah.
My gosh. Oh, my gosh. It was like I struggle. Some people might know this on the socials, I was sharing like reels and sharing memes. It was just a meme. It was a Lord of the Rings meme. And I thought it was the funniest thing I had ever seen. But I was like checking with people. Is it appropriate to like send this? It was just funny. And it was really honestly hilarious. I went to a colleague of mine at work and I was like, what do you think? And she's like, that's funny. And I was like, okay, cool. Because I never want to offend anybody, but I just, my sense of humor is. And people have different you know, tolerances for types of humor and different things.
Oh yeah,
so,
for sure. That's right. Know. Yeah.
And it's all about being considerate.
Read the room. And
yeah, read the room, understand your audience, right. That kind of stuff. All right. All right. All right. All right. Moving on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They're on their way back, I think, to the common room. And then all of a sudden in the corridor, they see Pigwidgeon, who is the cutest, but Ron kind of hates how he's loud and you know, girls think he's cute and he just thinks he's annoying.
Right.
So he grabs him and gets the answer from Sirius. Sirius reminds him, he's happy, obviously, that Harry made it through the first task, but he also reminds him, constant vigilance.
Yes.
Be on guard.
Come on.
However, I thought this was kind of interesting. In the book version, he doesn't even sign off with Padfoot, but with Sirius, which to me seems very risky.
Risky, buddy.
There it is. Sirius.
I know. I got it right
I'm
here,
serious.
Too. Yeah, he's serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, well, he just trusted Pig.
Pigwidgeon.
Yeah, to get the letter there, man. Like, don't let me down. I'm signing my real name here.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
And that's why maybe he was so proud. He has a little chest out there and the girls were checking him out. And he's like, yeah, what's up, Ron? This is a good thing. And Ron's like, no, they think you're cute. Stop.
Yeah.
This is not cool, buddy. Get back in my pocket.
Yeah.
So anyway,
Hermione really agrees with Sirius about being careful. Reminds Harry still needs to solve the mystery around the egg. Boys are like, whatever. It's just, you know, as if it is an annoying piece of homework. And then they play chess instead.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll put it off
just
later.
Enjoy your holidays. And I can see both sides. But I think I would be more like Hermione, just too nervous to keep pushing it off. But at the same time, February 24th, I think, is the deadline.
Got time.
Yeah, you feel like you still have a lot of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's but Christmas. Think, enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, right? I don't know.
Chill out, Hermione.
I would also be curious, though, to find out what this egg is all about.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
but I mean, on a Christmas day, I think it, or the day that's before, true. It's like okay to like not worry about it. And speaking of Christmas day, actually, so we get to this has actually happened to me quite often. I hate to say this, sweetie, but there's been mornings where I've woken up to
you
just
had an elf
these,
in your face,
just these eyes just staring at me. Just, you know, and I'm like, and I mean, you're coming out of a dead sleep and like, ugh, like, what?
I'm watching you.
They're just watching me. And I'm like, and then in your subconscious, you like, no, you know, someone's watching you. So when you wake up, you're like, oh God, they're there. And that's exactly what happened to Harry with Dobby.
Yeah, that's, I mean, kind of scary though, when you don't expect it, because we expect it because we, you know, fell asleep next to each other. So we know when you wake up, there is somebody next to you in the bed.
Yeah.
Should be, at least.
Yeah. What about when we, like, when Luke gets a little bit older and then he's, you know, runs in bed, jumps in there and sleeps. I'm like, okay, whatever. And we wake up in the morning, he's just like on your chest, just looking at you, waiting for you to wake up. Oh boy.
Oh, he's not going to wait.
Those are years
away.
He's
not going to wait.
Yeah, he's probably,
he's going to jump up and down.
Hopefully
he's
he just gets
like
right to it and gets after it. Don't be scaring me like that. So.
Yeah. But Dobby is there. He doesn't know these social clues and things, right? He's just there to drop off a Christmas present for Harry.
Yeah.
And then, but Harry, he's so scared that he kind of yells and wakes up the other boys. Seamus thought someone's attacking Harry, which is probably still a concern lingering from last school year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting that Harry just says, no, it's Dobby, without explaining that he's a house elf. He just says, it's Dobby.
Yeah.
So it seems like Dean, Seamus, and Neville are familiar with Dobby.
Yeah, are they?
Even though we've
stories?
Never, yeah, probably they shared stories about Dobby somehow. Yeah. Because again, I don't think they've ever met Dobby.
I think anyone who saw a house elf in any of their common room would freak out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
They say they're not supposed to be seen by the students.
Yeah. Right. And so, yeah, interesting. In Hogwarts Legacy, you get to meet good old Deke.
Yeah.
Right. He's cool. You know, he shows you around. So it seems like it was. They were more aware of them, or maybe we just know more about them. And as the series went on, when you go make that game, you're like, oh yeah, health elves are a thing. You have to have them around. But anyway, they are, there's reason to be like kind of scared because like you said last year, I mean, they got their apartment broke into.
Right.
And so, yeah, but Harry's got it. Seamus is like, you got it, mate. You're good. And it's just Dobby. So then there's the exchange of presents, right? Which I think you would like Dobby's gift. I feel like you would. I feel like you and Dobby are kind of kindred spirits. Crocheting socks, you know.
He's always knitting.
Oh, okay. It's a difference. Yeah. But yeah, I feel like you would have liked a good pair of socks, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, but I like my socks matching.
Oh, well, that's just not his style.
No, yeah.
So, yeah. Great, though. It was actually one of my trivia questions was going to be to ask you what was Ron's gift to Dobby.
Yeah, and I can tell you that.
Yeah.
He gave him two things. I think his sweater. Mm-hmm. His ugly sweater that he just hates the color that his mom chooses every year, right? So
yeah,
but she hand knits them as well,
right?
And he gives it to Dobby though because he doesn't want his, and then also another pair of socks, right?
He gives him one of his socks because the Uncle Vernon socks are matching. He's like, oh Harry, they messed up. They made two of the same. They gave you two of the same.
How could you?
Right. And then Ron's like, ah, oh, dang it, Harry, come on. He's like, here you go, Dobby. And he tosses one of his socks. So that way they're mismatched.
I think Ron is a little overwhelmed by the gratitude that Dobby's just so happy. And Ron is basically dumping his old stuff on him.
Mm-hmm.
And he almost feels a little not embarrassed, just uncomfortable. Like, I mean, he feels so happy that Dobby is happy about this, but then he's like, oh man, like, it's just some old socks.
Yeah.
Calm down.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. Just giving something we already possess, but we don't need as much anymore to someone who needs it or really wants it. It just can be so good, you know?
Yeah.
That's
what hobbits do on their birthday. Yeah. They re-gift things and everybody gets a gift when they show up to Bilbo's birthday. So,
you know, not dropping your junk on them, but if you know they really enjoy it, mm-hmm. giving it away, I think that's perfect. Yeah. I don't believe in you always have to buy new stuff for people, right?
Right, no.
I loved when, you know, Sarah, your sister, is giving us some of the old baby stuff, and I'm so grateful for it. It's as if she bought it new. It doesn't matter to me, but that she's willing to, give it to us. And
yeah, we have people at school who were also like, hey, here you go. Here's some stuff that we think would be really good. Some stuff is like still in packages and they're like, we didn't even use it. So here it is. It's great. Super kind of people. Speaking of gift giving, though, and all the different gifts that were passed around and received, the trivia question was the old pin knife.
Yeah, and I even have it in here with a link.
Yeah, you got a link in here for the known uses. And I think these are pretty cool.
Did you already open it?
Didn't realize,
okay, good.
That the uses are going to be this year.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. I forgot. So during the second task of the Triwizard Tournament, Harry was required to free a hostage bound to a statue in the Mer People village in the Great Lake.
Yes.
And
which he wasn't supposed to, and probably normally he wouldn't have been able to do that, right?
Right. So it's just mentioned. It says he regretted not bringing his knife with him, though. So it's not really a use. They list it as like a use, but he didn't bring it. He instead uses a sharp rock.
Oh, okay.
But he wishes he would have brought it.
Yeah.
So there you go.
And then do I remember it correctly? Do they break into Umbridge's office with the knife?
Yep. They sure do. Yeah. Sorry, this is interesting. So he uses it to get into Umbridge's office.
Yeah.
And try to, because all the other fireplaces but hers were being watched.
Right.
And he wanted to contact Sirius Black. Right. So he gets in there. And then later in the Department of Mysteries, Harry tried to use the knife to open the door to the love chamber, but the blade melted.
Whoa.
Right. It's not known whether he ever managed to have it repaired, although it may have had multiple blades among its attachments. In any case, following the failed attempt to unlock the door, he placed the now useless, air quote, useless handle of the knife in his pocket.
Wow.
So, yeah, I guess it gets in any other door, but not the love chamber. There's a special lock on the love chamber. Gonna have to figure out what spell works.
Wow. And that must be powerful because that knife gets you into anything.
Anything. Yeah. Except for the love chamber, which means. It's a big deal. Yep, I think we all want to know what's...
I know. What's behind it? Love?
Well, what's the magic? We know what's behind the door to the love chamber, but we're wondering, how do you keep it locked, you know?
Yeah.
You get me?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. Moving on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so cool gifts, actually, for Christmas.
Really cool. One of them is Mrs. Weasley's sweater for Harry. It's amazing. She knitted a dragon onto it in honor of Harry's success at the first task. I thought that was pretty cool. Okay, let's get through this because we want to get to the Yule Ball, actually. So they have some breakfast, some dinner, lots of Christmas stuff. I mean, they have...
Skip. They do a snowball fight. Yeah. Listen, bros, they're out there having a good day.
Right.
Blah, 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 blah. They're concerned. Actually, I think Hermione leaves like 3 hours ahead of time to get ready. And Ron's like, well, four, you know? Yeah. But because she needed longer to get ready. The guys all roll up at like 7 o'clock and start to get ready and get all of their different robes on. And they're getting a little self-conscious, I think.
Oh, yeah.
It's sort of like, okay, how are we looking? Ron is the most, right? He's really nervous about his robes. Then they start to head to the ball. And Harry meets up with Pavarti. And she says, hey, Padma's going to meet us down there, Ron.
Right, because she's a Ravenclaw, as we all know, who read the books. She ain't a Gryffindor.
Yeah, so.
And yeah, they come into the entrance hall full of students in their dress robes waiting for the doors to be opened. I think Padma would be probably really nice and sweet. And I feel bad that Ron and Harry really can't enjoy that night with them and have fun and just are so focused on other things. But also, again, they're you know, trying to watch the other girls that they're actually interested in. So, they see some Slytherins are coming up from the dungeons. As we say here in Chill Cottage. And how dare Harry assume that Crabbe and Goyle didn't manage to get a date?
Right.
Maybe they just wanted to go as friends because they are going clearly there. It looks like they're going together. Maybe they just wanted to go as friends. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And just have fun.
Exactly.
That's again, we always get the perspective of Harry and his friends. So, and then the Durmstrangs come in and Harry just sees Crumb and a very pretty girl next to him. He didn't recognize. But it turns out it's Hermione in her blue dress robes. So we all have that picture of beautiful Hermione in her pink dress.
Yeah.
Actually blue. I love that she wears blue. I love blue.
Yeah.
And I wondered if Fleur, who was going with Roger Davies, was actually hoping that Cedric would ask her. But Cedric asked Cho instead, right? So because they see her talking to Cedric. I think she was kind of interested in Cedric too.
Yeah, somewhere I read, I don't know if it was like a previous or if, I don't know where this was. I did a short recently about Cedric and I read somewhere that he, and I might have just missed it, actually turned Fleur down. He has already committed to Cho.
That's what I think too. And that's why she's probably a little not the biggest fan of Cho either. And wanted to. Then
Cedric's loyal, man.
I mean, Roger Davies seems a nice guy to be a nice guy too, but maybe she wanted to get back at Cho for, you know, like the Ravenclaw Quidditch captain that later Cho comments in, I think, the next book when he's at she and Harry are dating Valentine's Day and they see Roger Davies with his girlfriend smooching and like she just can't keep her, like she just keeps looking at him. So maybe there was an interest in that too. Like her and Roger.
Oh, really? Okay.
So maybe Flora wanted to get back at her for stealing Cedric.
Oh, gotcha. I never thought about that. I never thought about Cho being interested in old Davies. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Or maybe Flora just thought that. Anyway, I mean, there's so much happening here. And we have to skip around a little bit. So I love that Hermione just makes everybody's jaw drop. Even Malfoy and Parkinson are so shocked at how stunning she looks. They can't find anything nasty to say this time. They just are caught off guard in this moment. But my favorite part is when Harry sees Percy at the judge's table and Percy tells him he's been promoted, quote, and from his tone, he might have been announcing his election as supreme ruler of the universe. That's like,
he's all about his promotions. That's all he cares about.
Yeah. But he's representing Mr. Crouch, who is still unwell. As we know, he remains under the Imperius curse and is probably fighting it more and more. So poor Mr. Crouch. There's no one else who can step in for him but Percy. So again, the champions, they sit with the officials. So the champions and their dates, they sit at a big round table with all the officials and the headmasters and all them. And so that way Harry gets to hear a little bit of Crum and Hermione's conversation, I think. And he's shocked that normally Crum's pretty quiet. He doesn't say much, right? But he talks a lot to Hermione.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, oh yeah, I said in my notes, I said, finally someone who gets the W sound right. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's written in his accent language.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When he says, well, we have a castle also, not as big as this, nor as comfortable, I am thinking. He was telling Hermione, we have just 4 floors and the fires are lit only for magical purposes. But we have grounds larger even than these, blah, blah, blah. So he does like his castle, but I think he really is interested in Hogwarts as well.
Though in Venta, we have very little day light, so we are not enjoying them. But in summer, we are flying every day over the lakes and the mountains.
Beautiful.
Yeah, they do have, I mean, actually, I think that is the thing, right? It's not even just in German, is it? In other languages over there, too, that the W's are pronounced with?
Yeah.
The V sound?
Yeah, a V sound, yeah.
Yeah, because I can hear it when your mom talks to you.
Oh, yeah.
Too, and,
yeah. Yeah, it's hard for them to pronounce it differently, but also it's hard for you guys to then see something with a W in German.
Yeah.
You know, instead of saying where, that's the best part. Mm-hmm. So where in German means wo,
mm-hmm.
and wer in English means who.
Yeah.
So,
but to spell wo, it's
W-O.
W-O.
Yeah, wo.
Yeah.
My students always struggled with that.
Yeah, was ist das?
Yeah, was ist das, yeah.
Was or was ist das? No, it's was.
Was ist das, yeah.
Anyway, there you go.
Some fun language stuff here.
Good old invigorating language stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, it's so cute that he just opens up to Hermione and it's really, really chipper there. And Karkaroff doesn't like it because Hermione's a Muggle-born. She wouldn't even be allowed to go to school at Durmstrang, right?
Yeah. And Crum is so interesting because we know later, he's very anti the Deathly Hallows and the whole blood purity thing, and
mm-hmm.
Grindelwald has a history and understands that he comes from Durmstrang and is very much like not impressed by it. So yeah, good on him. He's a good guy, actually. Ron loves him up to this point, and now he hates him, took his girl.
I know, that can change everything. I mean, honestly, again, watching Cobra Kai, everything is about, you know, stealing somebody's girl and fighting for your love,
getting them back,
right? Yep. Or boy, you know, all the other way around. I thought also this line was pretty interesting when Karkaroff and Dumbledore, so at the same table here, talk about their different opinions about knowing and keeping their schools a secret. And in this line, Dumbledore basically describes how he found the Room of Requirements. He says, only this morning, for instance, talking about Hogwarts, only this morning, I took a wrong turning on the way to the bathroom and found myself in a beautifully proportioned room I have never seen before, containing a really rather magnificent collection of chamber pots. When I went back to investigate more closely, I discovered that the room had vanished, but I must keep an eye out for it. Possibly it is only accessible at 5:30 in the morning, or it may only appear at the quarter moon, or when the seeker has an exceptionally full bladder.
Yeah. And who's he hoping overhears that?
You think so?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Dumbledore knows that that's been there.
You think so?
Dumbledore found the Room of Requirement when he was a kid.
I mean, yeah, it looks like in Fantastic Beasts they used it.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's just so that way Harry overhears it, right? He's talking about like secret rooms and secrets and, you know, from a student's perspective, like, oh, wait, there's some vanishing room here.
Yeah. But I mean, to Harry, it sounds like it's just a toilet or, you know, bathroom.
Yeah. 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 But I mean, kind of cool. Kind of cool that plug is in there and they'll use it next year. And again, you know, there's this whole part of like the story and what is the plot. And then also J.K. Rowling making things up that she needs to put threads in for later in the next book. She knows they're going to be in the Room of Requirement. They're going to need a room like that.
True.
So you got to set it up here.
Yeah.
And
now you can go back and really read that or see that detail again.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Enough about dinner, though. Pork chops all gone.
Mm-hmm.
And Dumbledore transforms the Great Hall into a dance floor.
Let's go.
So, and the band, the Weird Sisters, they also have a bagpipes in their band.
That's kind of
pretty
cool,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He got the Weird Sisters, which is a huge band that all wizarding families, you know, all the kids who grew up in wizarding families know. So they're all stoked that they got them to come to this party. And the dancing part ended up not being as bad as Harry thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seemed like they were definitely not expected to dance a choreography like in the movie. It was more like, okay, just be there for 2 minutes on your own. But I do think it was well done in the movie. They obviously, the actors did a great job and had to put a lot of practice into the scene, I'm sure. But and I'm glad that Padma and Parvati later find a group of people that they can actually dance with, because that's what they came here to have fun, right? And even though Ron and Harry, they were just too busy staring at their crushes,
mm-hmm.
They found other people to hang out with, and they actually connected with some Beauxbatons boys.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like,
yeah.
And then the fight starts between when, you know, Hermione comes over. Ron throws a little tantrum about Vicky,
mm-hmm.
accusing her of fraternizing with the enemy. And this is clearly not the reason why Ron is so upset, but a nice excuse.
Yeah, Hermione.
Hermione.
Hermione. Hermione. Nini. Hermione. Close enough, she said,
yeah.
Catching Harry's eye and grinning. When all the food had been consumed, Dumbledore stood up and asked the students to do the same. Then with a wave of his wand, boom, the table zoomed back. And as you said, time to get into all the dancing and stuff. So, yeah, this is, I mean, I think it kind of plays out a lot of the bits and pieces here as we see sort of in the film. And yeah, you have a lot of the fighting going on between Ron and Hermione and like you said, the twins bounce and stuff like that. But what were some of the differences? Like, aren't there differences here at the end with in terms of Snape? Is that next episode? Yeah.
No, yeah, they have. Yep. They go outside. And we see, so there's a whole rose garden outside. And they go, just Ron and Harry can't stand inside. You know, everything seems to go wrong. And then they have to listen to Percy and Ludo talking about the flying carpets.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that issue in Britain. And just, they can't stand Percy's self-important talk anymore. And then they go for a walk.
Yeah.
And it's so cool. The description of the rose garden there, with the winding paths and stone statues, reminded me of the castle. Remember, we went to the castle gardens outside Cotter Castle in Scotland?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can totally picture that.
Yeah.
But a lot of students, you know, use the rose bushes for something else.
Some snogging. Yeah.
Some refuge for couples who want some privacy. Mm-hmm. But also, Snape and Karkaroff want some privacy because they're talking their good old Death Eater talk.
Yeah, for sure. Comparing notes, mm-hmm. talking about what's going to happen, what's coming up, the dark mark getting stronger. What are they going to do?
Right.
So that's alarming. It just so happens that, you know, it's just the way the story works out, right? Harry's mm-hmm. always bumping into Snape, but just the wrong time.
Right.
Right when he's, you know, fraternizing with the enemy, right? Yeah. And comparing the dark mark and everything.
And this is huge. I mean, Snape is a double agent.
Yeah.
Even now. And for him to talk in, like, you know, the Rose Guard outside in the Rose Guards where he knows, like, there's tons of students around,
mm-hmm.
it's very risky.
Yeah, but it's also, he's got to keep up appearances if Karkaroff does go back.
Right.
It's sort of like, he could say, mm-hmm. what's he going to say about Snape? You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So he's got to worry about that too, even though he doesn't, and Karkaroff will go on the run.
Yep.
Definitely something to be concerned about.
Yeah, so. Crazy. And then they overhear two other people, and they don't really, Ron and Harry really don't want to be there because they think it's so embarrassing because Hagrid is their friend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they see Hagrid on a date with Madame Maxime.
Yeah.
And first of all, I wanted to know, do you think Madame Maxime was, before all this goes down here, was genuinely interested in Hagrid, or was she just using him for the tournament?
I think she was genuinely interested in him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, yes. Also, there's the other, you know, you kind of get to, you get some benefits or whatever for sure. But nah, she was, it was legit. You could kind of tell.
I think she was, she definitely felt drawn to him, but also she was using him. I think, I don't know. Yeah. If it was for the tournament.
Well, she would but give, then
given different signals.
Yeah. This conversation, then it turns out kind of bad for Hagrid, right? I mean, where he assumes too much and then she stomps away. So it makes me kind of think like, well, she would, if it was really only about the tournament, then she would kind of suck it up and play along and just have this embarrassing moment that she didn't know anybody heard about. And she'd be like, you know, no, stop, never say it again.
Yeah.
Or play it off or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was genuinely an embarrassing thing for her. She didn't want to talk about Hagrid. So,
and it's sad that she's a strong woman, right? She is. Mm-hmm. I mean, we later see and hear from Hagrid when they go on their mission to actually get the giants on their side, how powerful she is. But that even she feels the pressure to keep it a secret, you know, about her heritage. And that's, that shows you how bad it is with the prejudice against giants. And that's why she doesn't want anybody to know or associate with how giants really are. That's nothing like her. She's very elegant, very, you know, like chic. And it's just, and Hagrid too, like he has, they might have a wilder, bigger appearance, but their characters are very human. They are very, Hagrid is one of the kindest people, right? That he just doesn't, sometimes he just doesn't know where the line is with his beasts and all that. But it's true. Like it shows you, it's sad that they have to feel like it needs to be a secret, but Hagrid doesn't know. He doesn't think about that. And I feel bad for him when he just strides off to his hut alone and really, really sad, I think, in this moment.
Yeah, tough time. It was so awkward, and it was such a, kind of just, I don't know, icky situation to be in, that Harry stares at a beetle.
Oh, yeah, that's a little detail. Yeah,
stares away at this little beetle, which happens to be Rita Skeeter.
Yeah, very important detail here. In this. Yeah, we see Rita. That's how she knows to write that article about Hagrid.
Wonder what it's like for her to transform. Like, where does she go and do that? You know, like just walk around the corner and just make sure nobody's there.
Yeah,
because she's an unregistered, right?
But in general, the logistics, right?
Yeah.
Of changing between human and animal form. How humans wear clothes, animals don't. You know how in other shows like Twilight, they always. I mean, they have no clothes when they transform back, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, Jacob and those guys.
But when we see Professor McGonagall in like the first movie transform into a cat and back, she obviously has clothes on.
Yeah, I've heard that it just changes with them.
Yeah, oh yeah, you see the spectacles and stuff, right? On her the tabby cat.
Yeah. So whatever they're wearing, I think that's how that
Yeah, they
works.
Don't keep it consistent in the movie because later on I think they have some weird moment with Sirius where he says goodbye to Harry
as Barry. Barry the dog comes in.
Right. And then he has to put on his sort of coat.
Jacket or whatever, yeah.
to cover himself up. So I think in general it's meant to be, you're right, the clothes change with you.
Yeah.
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 But yeah, it's crazy to, I don't know, be a beetle. Have you ever thought about being, like, what animal would you be and how it would feel like?
You know what's crazy is I was doing some research the other day about your Patronus.
Yeah.
And people were saying that whatever your Patronus is what your Animagus form would be.
Okay.
They said it would just be a fact. Like, I mean, because Prongs is, you know, he has a stag Patronus, so therefore he is... His Animagus form
would be
would be a stag.
Okay.
And he is, right? So the same thing with like,
does Lupin have a wolf as his, well, it's not really his Animagus, that's different.
No, but he does. His Patronus is a wolf, I believe.
Okay.
So once I saw that one, I was kind of like, well, okay, that, I mean, even though he's a werewolf, it doesn't really, what would his Animagus form be?
Could he even actually be both?
That's what I was just about to ask. Like, could he actually be a werewolf and an Animagus?
That'd be crazy.
And transform at will.
You can't. Yeah, as a werewolf, you can't do that anytime. You just have to wait for the full moon.
Yeah. So
you think you'd be a dog?
No, I actually don't know that I agree with the whole idea that your Patronus makes that whatever your Patronus is, because you can figure out your Patronus. I mean, every witch or wizard who can conjure a corporeal Patronus, they then know what their Animagus form would be. I'm not so sure. Does that mean then that Rita Skeeter's like Patronus is a beetle? I mean, I don't think that's the key. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Can you imagine like the mentors and there's a little beetle like trying to fight them off?
I mean, if it's possible, I guess so. But I think that's a misconception in the fandom that like your Patronus equals what would be your Animagus form.
Right? I don't think so either. Yeah. And it could be close in a lot of cases, but
yeah. For example, I was like, I theorized that, that Severus Snape, after all the different obsessions, like seeing, learning about Animagus, like unregistered Animagi or Animagi, however you say it, being this friends, like the Marauders, like why wouldn't he then start to think like as a double agent, that might be a good thing to have.
Right.
It might be a good thing to be an Animagus as a double agent in case you need to sneak away or spy or do something else. So to me, I felt like, why wouldn't he be?
Right.
And if you're in these really spooky places with a bunch of Death Eaters, being a bat would be
awesome.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, but everyone's like, no, it can't be. His Animagus form could not be a bat. It has to be a doe.
No.
Because of his Patronus. No. And I'm like, that's baloney.
That's baloney. And often they say your Patronus has something to do with the people you love, right? So why would, but your own personality, your own traits, your own essence is different. So I don't believe that either.
Yeah, it's just kind of crazy. So like you're saying, I mean, Lily Potter's Patronus is a doe because she's in love with James Potter,
right?
And his Patronus is a stag. Okay, so I kind of get, you know, like that you're her Patronus. Did it change? Would it have been different?
They can change. Yeah,
so it would have been different, right? So if it can change, I feel like whatever your Animagus form would be, it doesn't change.
True.
So I don't know. I think the best example though is this Rita Skeeter situation.
Yeah.
Which is like, you're telling me her Patronus is a beetle because her Animagus form is a beetle. Like that's no way.
Yeah.
There's just no way. Yeah. I'm trying to think of other ones that would be kind of ridiculous to have, but anyway. Yeah. So what would I want to be though? If I could have, I would want to be an owl.
Yeah. That's so cool. I love that.
That'd be kind of cool. Right.
I'm always torn between like a flying animal, like a bird or a cat or something that's really fast and sneaky and or small, you know, that can hide really well. Like a beetle, cool. I wouldn't want to be a beetle, but
flying
is awesome.
It is awesome, but I also am a little bit afraid of heights. I'm not so sure it would work, but I could get over that by being an owl, and it would be really kind of my two favorite animals are turtles and owls. Because they represent wisdom.
Yeah.
Right.
I love it.
But I don't know if I don't know if I'd want my Animagus form to be a turtle.
That's so cute.
You know, everyone would be like, "All right, Ez, let's go. We're rolling out." You know, and I'm just like, "All right, see you guys in a few." You know, let me know how it was. I'll just be back here chilling.
Oh, that's so cute.
Isn't that crazy? So, like, what if you were if I was one of the Marauders, and they're like, "We're gonna explore the castle grounds," and I'm like, "Sweet guys, I'm gonna do the Animagus thing," and then like I change, and I'm a turtle. It's like, have fun.
That's cool.
So crazy. I guess I could jump on Sirius's back or something and hold on.
Yep.
Go for a ride. But
you'll be a good swimmer.
Yeah. Anyway. The chapter pretty much though ends just with all these different fights and accusations between Ron and Hermione, and pluck up the courage next time, right? And ask me yourself instead of as a last resort.
Exactly.
So good for Hermione.
Right before that, though, not to forget to mention, Cedric sees Harry and gives him a little hint. I wonder if Cho made him do that, or, you know, if he wants to look good in front of Cho, though. Maybe Cho didn't say anything, but he just wants to look like a good guy. No, Bill's shaking his head. No, that's just Cedric's personality. He really wants to give that favor back.
Absolutely.
To Harry, and tells him, go take a bath with Egg.
Yep.
Here's the password to the Prefect's bathroom. Guess what I did there with Joe the other day. I'm not gonna tell you.
Whoa. And all meanwhile Moaning Myrtle's watching. Good God.
Obviously he was there alone because Moaning Myrtle saw him. Kind of crazy. She's crazy.
She's crazy, man. She's crazy. But I mean, whatever, you know. See, poor thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it was good. I think that is what Cedric that's him. That's just who he is. That's why he's the best. And it's just awesome. You know, something I want to mention, I guess, we done with the chapter then there?
Yeah.
Just something kind of quick.
Just, it just ends with her Romione's fight. But yeah.
Right. Any outpost or anything?
There is one.
Okay.
Just a little question. And I didn't want to forget about it because Jack has wrote in twice, actually. Thanks, Jack, for your owls and for, you know, writing your thoughts about or congratulations and stuff like that. But he also had a question that I didn't want to forget about. Now that the part, and this is unrelated to the chapter, but he wonders, now that the part of Voldemort that was in Harry is gone, you know, after the series is over, is Harry still able to talk to snakes? And I thought I feel like you've read something about it once, because you're deep into the Horcrux and Voldemort lore right now.
Yeah.
But you can also just give your opinion. Like, what do you think?
I think this is a great question. I mean, so you're saying that, like, when Voldemort is in the Forbidden Forest and he casts Avada Kedavra at Harry, he kills the portion Scarcrux and it is gone. After that moment, could he speak to, let's say, Nagini? Could he speak to any snake afterwards?
Because it's never something he acquired. But I think it's something that you inherit anyway, right?
I mean, it's really kind of a mystery as to how that we know House Gaunt is able to speak to snakes.
Yeah.
Right. And that Salazar Slytherin himself, right, and his descendants could speak Parseltongue.
Right.
So does he only get that because of, and it's, I guess so, right? Because the only reason, if Harry would have grown up a normal life without the attack from Lord Voldemort, he wouldn't have been able to speak to snakes. Probably so I think the answer is, pretty clear that once Scarcrux is destroyed by Voldemort, he loses his ability to speak Parseltongue, unless you're going to say that he just has learned it over the years. Like when he first starts speaking, it's he doesn't realize he's doing it. Natural.
Yeah.
And there's no real understanding or comprehension awareness that he's doing it.
Yeah.
Right.
Later on, he's more aware of it when he has to speak it on, you know, when he has to open the Chamber of Secrets and all that, he knows
for sure. And we know Ron learned it just by being nearby. So it is possible that Harry knows some phrases still, and that they did stick in his memory, and that some of that is still around because of his experiences.
Yeah.
But I think his ability to be fluent in Parseltongue is gone.
I think he would still know some stuff. I don't think it's completely forgotten. Maybe he, like you said, he wasn't super aware of it, but maybe he's learned and memorized some things over the years. But maybe to have a full conversation with a snake or someone else who knows Parseltongue.
Yeah.
Maybe that would fade a little bit. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Good question, though. Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Appreciate it. The question I have for you.
Okay.
Here's just one off the top of my head. If the Goblet of Fire had to choose a second Hogwarts Triwizard champion besides Cedric, and I mean a legitimate of age individual, who do you think the Goblet would have chosen as a second Triwizard champion?
Easy.
Who?
Angelina Johnson.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. I think she would be
legit,
she would
have
made a great champion. Yeah.
I thought so too. And I just wanted to make sure that we said that on this podcast.
Yes.
Angelina Johnson would have been the next up.
Yeah, I think
right
so.
Right behind Cedric. If Cedric would have transferred that year and said, bye, I'm out of here, the cup would have chosen Angelina as the Triwizard.
Of course,
champion.
We don't know all the students who entered their name really well, but from what we know, I think she would have been a great choice.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, I do wonder how Hermione would have handled being in the tournament. Because I would be so split between, she's so smart, she knows so much. And later, I mean, we see her grow into this fighter, really, who can actually use all her knowledge in combat and in really stressful situations. But it takes her time to get there. In the beginning, in the first couple of books, she is not very good when it comes to those very, performing under pressure. And she forgets that even that she can do magic in the first year. And I wonder, if she would have been a good champion. Probably at 5th year or older, probably.
Yeah,
but right now, She's still developing her transferring skills, you know, transferring her knowledge into, because of the last year, couple of years and stuff. But she would, I mean, she would have figured out that egg probably real quick and had time to think about how to handle that.
Yeah, agreed. I think Dumbledore's army is something that really helps all of them out.
Oh,
a lot
for sure. Yeah,
gets them sort of, you know.
Yes.
Advancing rather quickly. So, yeah. All right, friends. Well, I think it is time for a bathroom break here in Shell Cottage. I mean, just something that happens.
Bathroom and water break.
Water break, and then we're gonna
say my water broke. I said water.
Whoa,
break.
That's good. That's good to know the distinction. But we'll be back here. Obviously, we're going to keep right on recording and get right into the next chapter. But friends, that is all for this episode. Thanks for tuning in to Shell Cottage Radio 94.7 COZY. We hope that you're going to join us in the future. We do thoroughly enjoy meeting new positive Potter people that'll behave like babbling, bumbling bands of baboons. If you don't want to miss out on the next episode, then be sure to subscribe and follow our podcast. Leave us a review and follow on social media at Fleur and Bill.
If you truly enjoy our content, consider supporting our literally growing wizarding family on Patreon or Apple Premium. You will find all the links down below. Thank you so much to all our current patrons. We appreciate you, Tuluna, and back. And on our next reread episode, we will discuss Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, Chapter 24, Rita Skeeter's Scoop. So make sure you tune back in next time. And until then, have a wonderful rest of your week. Thanks for joining us in our Shell Cottage today. We know it's not much, but it's home.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.